Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Recalibration Matrix. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me, as always, is my fabulous co-host,
Greg Webster.
Hello, Greg Webster.
Hey, Jay, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm really good. I got to play some more games yesterday. I'm kind of experimenting with all the different crisis cards to...
Okay.
I'm kind of thinking about how they're supposed to affect list composition. And it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. I played a game that it did have a pretty big impact on that I wasn't necessarily expecting as far as the scenario, which one would end up, what I wanted to do. So we can go over that a little bit.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Later.
Yes, sir.
It's interesting to me how... And some of it is just going to be needing to get the opportunity to play each of the scenario elements to get an idea of like what type of characters like which scenarios. Mm-hmm. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. I think that's maybe one of the higher level thinking steps we need to do to play.
Yeah. So I guess here at the start, I think it might be interesting to talk a little bit about... We're just barely, you know, post-launch of the game. My store actually, we had our launch event where it has the alternate art Avengers Assemble card and the assembled patch.
Yeah.
And so, I guess what, you said you got some games this weekend. What are your thoughts, I guess, slightly post-launch of the game now?
So far, I think it's kind of weird because it's the weekend right before Thanksgiving. I think I'm really excited because so many people brought, I think like three players I demoed for like brought their kids, and I'm actually really excited to see there be, you know, some younger players in a minis game.
Yeah.
Because I definitely like, as a teacher, I saw those like those kids start to be like confused at the beginning, and then by round two, they were like, okay, let's go do this now.
Right.
And so they went from that like confused kid to like they had it and they were trying things out. We did our launch day event the weekend of, actually, as the,
nice.
Like, you know, we were demoing the game and people were assembling and we were all just having a good time at the store. We got that really cool alt art card and the patch that says assembled, which is neat.
Yeah,
I like that a lot. But you know, I think everybody's still uncertain about what to take. And I played a game where someone was just like they really didn't want to take Captain America or Red Skull.
Okay.
And so we were just like, yeah, sure, let's see if it feels like it's missing.
That seems like such a huge handicap.
It really turned out to be, and that was my feeling too. I was like, are you sure, like, Captain America, you could swap, like, I think he took Captain Marvel, and I was like, I really think you should switch these two, and he was like, no, I'm going to try this out, and I was like, okay, yeah. It was a huge handicap. It really was. And because I know we were talking about, or maybe you were talking about it, like, it does feel like you have to set aside 4 points for your leader,
right,
and then build from there, which, you know, might be true.
Yeah, I think that was actually in a discussion about on Facebook about the Hulk. And I was like, well, if you have your 4-point leader and you have Hulk, you're at 10 points.
Yeah.
And your pathway, if you're playing like a 17-point scenario, your pathway to get to five characters doesn't really exist.
Yeah. The choices aren't there yet.
Yeah.
And that's... No, I think you're right. Like, that's definitely an important thing to think about.
And I guess you could play Hulk without a leader and be handicapping yourself even more.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem great to me.
No, it really doesn't.
Okay, well, this episode is focusing on the Black Widow. Mm. So, do you want to give the stat breakdown, or do you want me to?
I will give the stat breakdown. I'm fine with that. So, Black Widow is a 4 stamina character, so she's the lowest hit points that we have. She is a long movement. She's size 2 because she's a normal human size. She's 2 threat, making her the only 2 threat character that we have so far. Her physical defense is 3. Her energy defense is 2. And then her mystic defense is 4. I take this because she's been a mentally trained assassin.
Right, yeah.
And it's more her like mental capabilities. She has her strike. And this is kind of interesting because most of the characters have like a really basic strike where the damage dealt is equal, gives them power. Right. Her strike is an energy attack instead of physical because she has the Widow's Stingers, which is like an energy weapon gauntlet that she has. So hers is an energy type instead of a physical type. And then it's range 2, strength 4, and it costs 0. Like I said, it does generate power equal to the damage it's dealt. And it has a wild effect because it's her special strike called the Widow's Sting that after it's resolved, the target character loses 1 power. So if she deals 1 damage, she doesn't actually give them a power for it, which is kind of cool. She has a pistol, which is range 3, and then it is power 4, and it costs 0. It's strength 4, and then it costs 0 power. And that has no special abilities. It's just another physical attack she can make for free. And it's her only attack at range 3 as well. So that it's her longest range attack. So it's possible that it'll come in use. But mixed technique is her strongest attack. It is range 2. It has 4 strength, and it costs 2 power. And then, if it deals damage, after the attacker's resolved, the target character gains stagger. So this is really big. It's not a wild. It just, if it deals damage, it staggers your opponent, which is basically, it means your opponent is forced to shake stagger before they do anything else. So they have to give up one of their actions in a character activation. So that's a huge, like, that's a really useful special condition. Mixed technique also has a wild effect for elusive that after it's resolved, she can move short. So she can go in, do a little bit of damage, stagger the opponent, and then hopefully walk away or get back in a better position. She has Counter-Strike, which is identical to what's on Baron Zemo from our first episode. Counter-Strike costs 2, and then after an attack against the character is resolved, it can use Counter-Strike. And then if the attacker is within 3, you roll 4 dice, and it deals 1 damage to the attacker for every critical and wild rolled. There have been a lot of questions about Counter-Strike recently. It is not an attack roll, so you do not get to roll defense against it. It just deals the damage. And also, you do not get to have the exploding crits. So it's just for every crit and wild out of those 4, it does 1 damage. She has a defensive ability. She actually has 2 defensive abilities. The first one is Martial Artist. If she's defending against physical or energy attack within range 2, she adds blanks to her defense roll. And then she has Stealth, which is enemy characters have to be within 3 of her to target her with attacks, which that does not include throwing terrain at her because that's not an attack, but it will keep her safe from a lot of the longer range characters. It is identical on her injured side. Nothing changes.
Awesome.
She's also in the Avengers affiliation, which I realize we haven't been specifying, but there you go.
So I guess what are some of your initial thoughts on the Black Widow?
I think my very first thought is that she's an auto include right now because she's our only threat 2 character. And that like just being threat 2 makes her kind of our only threat 2 choice. But She has a lot of bonuses. She has two really good defensive abilities that will help her out. She moving long and those defensive abilities make her ideal for grabbing extraction scenario crises and then, you know, getting away from taking damage. She has stagger.
Let me do a follow up real quick.
Okay.
On one of the things you said. So you said that it sometimes feels like she's an auto include. Let's say that you're. I think one of the questions, especially here at the start, where we have fewer options to build with. Mm-hmm. So let's say that you aren't playing. I will first of all like agree that if you're playing MODOK or Hulk, then she basically is probably an auto include because you need to have her as a compensating point cost effectively, right? But let's say that, for example, you're playing a Cabal force, and let's say that, you know, let's say that you're just playing like the base five bad guys that are in the core box. You know, is it necessarily clearly true that, like, let's say that you drop Dr. Octopus and Crossbones for, you know, Black Widow and then one of the four-point Avengers, whether it's Captain Marvel,
Spider-Man,
yeah. Right? Like, it's not necessarily clearly accurate to me or true that that's going to be a better configuration. I don't know. What are your thoughts with that?
I think calling her filler has a negative connotation, but that sure, is yeah. kind of how I think of her, just as being the threat too. I don't think she's bad. I don't mean to say that. I feel like because she's the only threat too, it's hard for me to compare her to say a threat three or a threat four and say she's like worth her threat two. And I definitely would say that if you really like let's say you really want Captain America in a scenario and you're going to swap someone in and you have 2 points left, you definitely want to take Black Widow. But is it better to take the 2-3 costs?
Right. So here's an example of we don't know how long this might take, but let's say that I'm assuming that most of the characters are going to be, you know, in the 3-4 threat level, threat range, and with some outliers, you know, like Hulk and MODOK that are higher, and then a few outliers that are lower. Mm-hmm. And so let's say that at some point there's a point in the game where the game's just gotten big enough that there are a lot of threat 2 characters for you to select from. Mm. So one of the things that some games like this have suffered from are a list building dynamic where you're best off taking as many low threat or low point cost models as possible. And so I would consider it a failure of game design, in my opinion, if the game got to a point where it felt like you had a big advantage if you took, like, say, one 4-cost hero and then 5
2-cost
heroes,
yeah,
and then 1 3-cost or whatever, and and you know we'll see what happens with that. But I do think it's a pretty interesting question of, like, right now, if you could take 3 characters like Black Widow or 2 characters like, say, Crossbones and Iron Man, I think in general, just because of the way that scenario play is, et cetera, that it seems like there would likely be an advantage to take the three 2-cost characters.
I would disagree. I think 2 Iron Men could easily take a scenario and disable 2 Black Widows every turn, leaving you with only 1 Black Widow that's able to get scenario. In this like really limited example.
Right.
Well, and I think that's part of what makes her a little bit difficult to talk about right now is that we're trying to discuss her in a more competitive and like open list building environment that doesn't exist yet.
Right.
Which is maybe us just setting ourselves up to like struggle with her.
Right. I don't know. I mean, I do think it's kind of interesting to think about and to speculate about, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I have too high of an opinion of her, but like, I think that she's really, really good for 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
I agree that she's good. Her weaknesses are that her attacks are all strength 4 and they don't go higher. Right.
Yep.
So in a lot of cases, she won't break defense. However, Counter-Strike and her defensive abilities and her long movement make her really interesting as a, you know, I'm going to take a scenario and then I'm going to be hard to remove.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of variables in play. But like if you had enough of these cheap, fast moving characters that could potentially go up, get extract tokens and then go to the edge of the board. Mm-hmm. That's potentially pretty difficult for the opponent to deal with.
Yeah, but maybe.
I don't know. I mean, it's the, on the other hand, your opponent can just end up potentially winning the die roll and picking the extract scenarios and then
I think
completely throw your plan.
In your hypothetical scenario, like let's say you're going to get half the extract tokens, or maybe let's say more than half, right? Let's say there's 5, you get 3 of them, and you're going to get 3 victory points every turn. But then you only have like 1 or 2 characters to try to take the secure scenarios,
right?
Which I'm going to easily do because I have my entire team, you know, coming at you. I mean, not to say that there's not a scenario where that happens. I've had friends who used to play the Star Wars miniature game.
Right.
And they told me all sorts of horror stories where you take 1 Jedi and 30 younglings and you just pretty much auto win because your opponent can't stop you.
Right.
Because you have so many.
So like, that's an example of what I would consider a breakdown in game design. And fortunately, it seems like we're likely probably not going to have that issue.
Certainly hope not.
Yeah. So one of the things that I think is interesting, just as like kind of a side note, is that I think that, you know, with the characters that we have available right now, if you look at the core box, MODOK, Hulk, it's kind of funny to me that if you look at Hulk, one of the more effective counters to him is a character that only costs 2 points. Mm-hmm. and so the reason why I say that is one of the things that Hulk really hates is status effects. And I think the two of the ones that are especially aggravating to him are stun and stagger.
Mm-hmm.
And with her mixed technique, it's a 4-dice attack, but his defense is so low that she probably is going to actually get the damage off.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That's something that I thought was kind of interesting. And it's also, I think one of the things that I think is potentially kind of an issue with Hulk is that at least at the start, I think you're going to see a lot of Black Widow on the table.
I agree.
And so him having her opposite frequently is something that's a little bit worrisome for him, I think.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think that makes sense.
So what would you say are ways, situations that you do like her in?
I like her in secure, not secure, extract scenarios where you can get like 2 or 3, two or three quickly with her. So like if she can double long and get one in the middle of the board that's worth multiple victory points, like the Skrulls infiltrate world leadership, is useful, or the alien ship one, if she can go in and get the Kree power core quickly, and then she can move away, and just sit on two victory points every turn while she harasses the enemy.
Right.
I also like her in which was the deadly meteors mutate, because you can use her, because she doesn't really use her powers, her power tokens much. Mixed technique costs 2, Counter-Strike costs 2. So if she's ever on like 7 or 8, she's not going to be able to use all of her power and get herself down to 0. But the deadly meteor scenario, if you are on a flank or in the center, you can control, you can interact with one origin bomb to control it, and then you can move long to another one and try it on a different one. And I think she's really good on that as well. Because she's move long, she has those defensive abilities we talked about, and she wants to be moving and playing on scenario.
I played Deadly Meteors Mutate Civilians this weekend, and I actually had Black Widow on that scenario, and I did not like her in it at all.
Oh man.
And part of the reason why is because it feels like if your opponent, kind of what you're ending up having is the characters move up and they're kind of duking it out there in the middle of the table or by those objectives. And if they have someone standing there by that objective that's healthy,
yeah, you're right,
then she has to get 2 successes on her 2 energy defense. And that feels really, really bad.
Okay, you're right. If there's no enemies there, it was what I was thinking, but right. You're right. She's not as useful at that point. I mean, she can still go in and take it if you're in late game and everybody's injured, yep. But you know, in the future too, right? If there's situations where she can control different consoles or whatever, you know, whatever comes out, because I think that is the only scenario that controls instead of secures. So in future control scenarios, I think she will be useful.
Sure. One thing I meant to say this at the start of the show, but one thing that's interesting that came up at our launch event was basically a rules question. And it's, if you read the rules as written, it works a certain way, and it is not what is kind of intuitive or what you would expect. So I'll go ahead and call it out real quick. But let's say that you and I are playing, Greg, and we're fighting over this one secure objective. And let's say I have a healthy character there, you have a healthy character there, and then you have an injured character there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what most people intuitively think when they read the rules is that you would end up scoring that objective, but that is not what happens. Instead, the way the rules are written are you check the number of healthy characters, and if someone has more healthy characters, then they'll score it.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time that injured characters count towards scoring it is if there's no healthy characters nearby. You don't check the injured at all until there's no healthy characters nearby. And so that's just a interesting rule to be aware of, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting that the secure scenarios basically ignore injured people.
Right.
And it makes it's one of those things that I like, because sometimes it feels like, you know, you could possibly win the game by attacking almost nothing. But when you're in a situation like that, you start going like, oh, well, I need to move enemies off of the objectives, or I need to try to daze someone to get an extraction token off them. And I really like the ignoring injured characters, because I think it helps with the swing. You know what I mean?
Because
it encourages an injured character to try to injure someone who's healthy.
Right. I guess let's go ahead and wrap up. And are there any closing thoughts on the gameplay of Black Widow you want to go over before we move on to the comic book arc we selected?
No, I think we covered pretty much everything I wanted to go over.
Cool. We'll have a lot of content to go over in the bonus episode. Mm-hmm. Stuff like action cards we like with her, or ways to get the most out of her or to play against her. So tune in for that. But let's go ahead and move on and talk some about our comic book club selection.
Yeah.
So what was the comic book arc that you selected this time?
So I picked a newer Black Widow comic from this year. It's just called Black Widow. 2019 is the year of publication on Marvel Unlimited. And I kind of picked this because it is a really interesting like standalone story, and it feels pretty modern compared to a lot of the stories we've been reading recently, which I thought was a big bonus. So yeah. Do you want to do a little quick Black Widow character bio before we go into it?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. So the character of Black Widow is basically she grew up in the Soviet Union, and she was recruited by the KGB, and she ended up joining. I've heard it called different things. I think it's called the Black Widow program most of the time, where there's like multiple Black Widows. And then there's also the Red Room. So the Red Room is like the training facility.
So real quick, I didn't realize this when I first went through these. And there's just a short paragraph at the start of the first one that would have been really useful for me to have read. Because it gives a good summary of some of the things that have gone on with her that were not in the movie. And so it says, Natasha Romanoff is a Red Room trained ex-KGB assassin, an ex-agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., and a sometimes Avenger. During the Secret Empire, she was murdered by an evil version of Steve Rogers' Captain America. The Red Room brought her back to life as a clone with implanted memories. Natasha destroyed the Red Room and the remaining clones, and now lives in the shadows as a dead woman, a ghost, a Black Widow.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm reading through the comic book arc, and it's like, you know, talking about evil Captain America and like him killing her and, you know, her coming back from the dead, stuff like that. And it would have been very helpful to have read that paragraph.
Yeah, you didn't know about evil Captain America?
I don't live under, I'm assuming that this is like an association to like the Fuhrer that arose from the comic when Captain America said Hail Hydra.
Yeah, that was that was evil Captain America.
Yeah. So like I was at least tangentially aware of that.
Okay. Yeah. So there's like one thing I think about her origins that a lot of people don't know, in that. So she does have some form of like superpowers, because in the Red Room, they gave her like their version of the super soldier serum. So she is like more powerful than a normal human in a lot of ways. So she's not just a normal person who's been trained. She has some like extra strength and agility and intelligence that she was like given.
Yeah. Like one of the things that I've kind of struggled with being interested with Black Widow, mm-hmm. is that, so first of all, on the one hand, I do like seeing strong and interesting female characters in the comics, and so that's great. On the other hand, like in general, I don't care about superheroes that don't have superpowers. And so, like, in general, that's how she kind of comes off to me. And so I kind of struggle with like being super interested in her, because that's just something that I have a hard time being excited about, non-super powered superheroes. So yeah, I don't know. That's it. Also, like, there's a part of me as well that I'm assuming that this is probably even more so true in the movies, but I can't think of the actress name right now that plays her.
Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson. She doesn't have quite the same effect on me that she does on most other guys in the movies. So
fair enough.
Anyways, back to, so I do think that's interesting that she has at least some abilities or whatever, that she's a cut above the normal person.
Yeah. And, you know, she's it's kind of like the Rick Jones thing we talked about before. She's been around so many amazing, you know, heroes and fights that, you know, she's been holding her own against the Hulk or and I do notice something in comics a lot of times where they make her like the pilot of the plane so that she doesn't have to be in the action sometimes, but she can hold her own.
So why don't you go ahead and give us a brief overview of what happens in the story arc?
Yeah. So it starts after the Secret Empire comic, which wraps up with her being dead, and then she's brought back, and now everybody thinks she's dead because they all saw her get her neck broken by Captain America. So she is basically, you know, doing missions secretly with Captain America. She's angry, and she finds out she basically like goes, she leaves America going to Madripoor. And Jay, I'm gonna pause. Madripoor is a imaginary country that is, in my opinion, most famous for being where Wolverine decided to wear a white tuxedo and an eye patch and call himself Patch when he didn't want to be Wolverine. And he like gambled and was a mercenary style guy. But it's basically like the underworld of the Marvel Universe all hangs out here and has a good time. So that's a weird bit of Marvel like background.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to think of kind of sounds like Macau or something in China.
Yeah, it exactly. Yeah. It's, you know, it's like a small independent city state. But you'll notice she wears an eye patch and a white suit in the very beginning. And okay. It's like she's female Patch is what she's doing.
Nudge.
Yeah, it's a cutesy little like Wolverine reference. And a bunch of the side characters are also characters that like Wolverine has interacted with. But as she's here, she finds out that there is something going on called No Restraints Play, which is rich people are paying tons of money to watch people be tortured over the internet. And she goes on a like a murder spree to find these like horrible people who are profiting off of it. And like she's fighting all sorts of villains that are involved with it. She double crosses Madame Mask, who's like a classic Hydra AIM villain. There's all these little, you know, there's all these little like villains that you see like at parties because they're, you know, they're, you see Zemo at one point flirting because Zemo was romantically with Madame Mask, and Sabretooth is there, and it's just all sorts of, you know, really scary Marvel villains. And so Black Widow ends up being captured at this supervillain party that she's trying to infiltrate. And from that, she thinks she finds out, you know, and kills a bunch of horrible people. Only to find out that she's actually been misled, and the real bad guy is someone who's been working with her to try to stop the No Restraints Play. So she ends up turning the tables and getting free, and then just taking everyone down in a John Wick style destruction spree. So I think it's more, it's like an action movie in my mind more than anything else. It's not really like a spy movie. It's got an exotic locale. It's got Black Widow just finding something to be violent at, and she's going all in.
One of the things I like quite a bit about this comic book arc was that, you know, she's basically part of this team of three people, her being one of the three, that is, you know, trying to fight to bring down this No Restraints Play criminal syndicate or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then towards the end, there's a double cross that happens to her that she doesn't see coming, and it was one that frankly I enjoyed a lot because it was one that I didn't expect either, and so I like that quite a bit in this storyline. And I will say that usually when I consume media, I don't spend a lot of time trying to suss out if there's going to be something like that coming, because I tend to prefer to just be surprised by it. Mm-hmm. But there's still some times where they're just like so inept at at doing it that you're like, oh, of course that double cross yeah. happened. You could see that coming a mile away. And I felt like they did a pretty good job of it on this comic book arc.
Yeah, it was surprising in the last act, and yeah, no, it was I really liked the just I felt like John Wick. It was almost like John Wick, right? She was just going through these bad guys. There's a lot of interesting side characters. And even then, I don't know a ton about some of these characters, like Tiger. I don't really, I haven't had much experience with her, and it's a really cool little self-contained story. And apparently they just, there's no more to this Black Widow series. It was just the 5 issues.
Okay.
Cause I was even like, oh, I want to see what more they have. But it's just, that's it. So maybe she'll show up in the Avengers after that.
So do you have any information that you'd like to share on the creative team behind this?
I actually have no idea about the creative team on this. I have never heard of them before. It's a pair of brothers, I believe.
I'm pretty sure I think I read
because it's Jen and Sylvia, right?
Yeah, I think I read the post log by the two authors.
Yeah.
And
yes, Jen and Sylvia.
It was kind of cool, basically reading their thing about, like, you know, we never thought that we would be able to do this, and it was awesome to be able to do it together, and, you know, et cetera. And so I thought that was I'd recommend actually taking the time to read the post log by the authors when you finish the series, because it was a pretty interesting read.
Yeah. And the art is really interesting, but I've never seen Flaviano before. So I just thought that was really cool. I believe he might be, Marvel's been trying to like reach out to like more international artists than they have in the past. So I think he's maybe a result of that, but I really like his art. I feel like the character, there's a lot of really like dynamic movement in it. Like the scene where Black Widow's hanging upside down talking to Captain America, and he's kind of like, his back is completely straight and she's like hanging upside down like it's nothing. I liked that. I thought it was really cool looking.
Yeah. So ultimately, why did you end up picking this comic book arc out of, you know, you said that there's been a whole lot of, Black Widow's been around for ages, and so why this one?
I have a couple reasons for not picking some of the older Black Widow comics. And it's that I really don't think Black Widow was used very well in some of the older stories. A lot of times she was like a different superhero's girlfriend was how she was used. Mm. And then when they broke up, she would like leave. Like in some of the more classic Daredevil stories, she was like dating him, or like, you know, it was like, are they going to get back together? And like, I really didn't think that was a good choice. She's always been a little bit of a supporting character. So picking like a really cool and new Black Widow series seemed like a good choice. And I tried looking at some other ones, and this one was just, it was a really solid story that stood by itself.
I thought that it was also, so this is the most recent comic book arc that we've done so far. We've mm-hmm. actually had a pretty interesting spread of in when they were created, a timeline of different comic book arcs that we've read, and so it was definitely interesting reading one that was basically so recently authored.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was also interesting. I know you said you didn't know much about the authors, but I did think that I'm assuming that this is something that Marvel is trying to do more of as well. But I did think it was great to see a Black Widow story arc that was written by two women.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was I thought that was interesting. That was good to see.
Yeah, I remember there was a few years back there was a bit of drama about how few women Marvel and DC hire,
right?
Because both of them are at, I think DC was bragging that they had like 7% women.
Okay.
And Marvel was like, yeah, we're at like 1%, but you know, we hire the best. And at the same time, there's a lot of really, you know, successful women artists and writers in independent comics. And so the question followed, like, okay, so why are a lot of these independent comics at like 30 to 40%
right.
women?
Yeah.
At least having a woman on the team. And then Marvel is and DC are so much lower. I mean, the same could be said of like Marvel and DC are both traditionally like white men dominated companies. And so it's a fair question, right? If you want to have diverse teams and diverse characters, you probably want to have diverse creators backing them up. So well, it was, I mean, cool that it was a pair of sisters.
Right. Yeah.
I Googled and they're twins. That's really cool too. That's just that is, like, yeah. I was like, that's neat.
And one of the things in the Pulse log that they talked about was their grandmother buying them comics and like wishing that they could see them now writing for Marvel and stuff. So that was cool. But it is, you know, they're one of the things that comics have obviously taken flack from is kind of just like crappy male portrayals of females,
mm-hmm.
where they don't get women. And so there was. And one of the things that I thought was actually interesting about this was that there were some parts that, because it did kind of feel like I think your description of it was right, where it kind of feels like a John Wick that is a female John Wick, right? But there's also kind of an aspect to it where, like, if it had been a guy who had done that, that Marvel and that author probably would have taken some flack for doing that, saying that it was, you know, not portraying women well or accurately or whatever. And so, in some ways, because they, you know, hired these sisters to do this, they had a little bit more creative leeway on what they could do, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like I said, I think it makes sense if you want to have more female characters in your comics to like have more female writers
right.
to create them. So, I mean, the same could be said with almost any character that's not a white guy, right? Like, if,
right. Yep.
I think, and I think I joked about it before, but like the way black characters used to talk in Marvel comics is
right, yeah,
a
yeah.
joke. It's a joke. And like it was.
Well, and it's come a long ways now to
yes,
where.
Yes, absolutely.
So like Ta-Nehisi Coates, which I don't know when it comes time to do Black Panther.
Oh, we're doing his Black Panther. Don't worry.
Okay, great. So, I mean, I know, obviously, I know very little about creative teams at Marvel, but I know that Ta-Nehisi Coates is a fantastic writer who contributed to Marvel. And so that's something that's I want to, you know, get a chance to read that because he's an amazing writer.
Yeah. Okay. Can we? I'm gonna go completely off Marvel right now. But another like because we're on this. One of my favorite fantasy authors is N.K. Jemisin.
Okay. Yeah.
Who won the Hugo Award 3 years in a row for a
right.
trilogy she wrote.
Uh-huh.
She just started a Green Lantern comic that's
oh,
like
wow.
a completely new Green Lantern on like the far reaches of space. And I bought that yesterday and I'm just like, I need to read that. I'm so excited for that. But it's the same idea. It's that, you know, these big publishers are realizing like, oh, hey, you know, if we have more diverse voices working for us, we're going to have more diverse, you know, points of view and ideas. And like another example would just be the Guardians of the Galaxy movie was written by a female writer. And she even had like she has anecdotes where they had all these like script writers come in and they gave her choices of like, what do you want to write? Like which do you want to try your hand at? And she was like, oh, I'm going to do Guardians of the Galaxy. And they were like, really? Do you want to you want to write a science fiction story? Maybe you want to do. And they tried to like push her towards some of the other possibilities. And she was like, no. I'm going to write Guardians of the Galaxy. This is the one I need to do. And so she's the one who wrote the script that James Gunn used. And like that's, you know, that's a good example of like the industries push people out sometimes,
right,
without thinking about how like, oh, we're losing that different point of view or voice.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's get off of this, you know, this stuff, and let's get back to the story.
Okay, so let's we can actually close out a little bit, do the last question for this. So what did you like the most about this story arc?
I think the thing I liked the most was how it flowed really well. From like one, I feel like when I was looking back at my summary, I was like, man, she goes to a lot of different places and does a lot of different things in just 5 issues.
Yeah.
But it flowed really well. Like she's following, like the fact that she's following an investigation, it makes a lot of sense when I was reading it and following through it. And I didn't feel like I was getting pulled to a bunch of different settings. And I feel like it was well written, like the way that it goes from the party to the, you know, they capture her at the end of the party, and then she escapes, and then she goes back, and then she like ends up realizing what was going on. I just felt like everything was it flowed really well. And then, you know, it was very interesting to see Black Widow as, because I think a lot of times she's shown as like a cold, you know, character who's been her emotions are removed because she's a professional, and this is kind of the opposite. She is being emotional because of the situation she's in.
So I already mentioned this, but one of the things I liked a lot was kind of the double cross in this episode. I thought that was well done. Mm-hmm. And as far as other things I like in this storyline, it was kind of interesting, like seeing her kind of divergent view of the world from Captain America, where she was just like, you know what, I'm just going to kill these people, and then I'm never going to have to deal with this problem again. And
yeah.
So that was interesting as well.
Yeah, it's kind of, I didn't even think about that, honestly. Like they're very much the opposite. Right. And
right,
that's,
yeah,
that's why he's in there.
Hmm. Cool. Well, so we're going to continue this conversation about our comic book club in our bonus episode. So tune in and we'll continue the discussion, and then we'll also talk some more about her in-game abilities. So real quick, Greg, why don't you go ahead and introduce the comic that we're going to do next for our next episode so that people can be prepared?
Yeah. So the next character we're going to be focused on is Crossbones. And the comic book, we're actually going to just read a single, it's a one-shot comic, but it's Captain America and Crossbones, issue 2, and it's from 2010. So we'll put a picture up in our groups so that you can see it, but that's the next one.
Awesome. So thank you very much to our Patreon supporters. You guys are awesome, and you guys are what helps make this possible, so thank you for the support. As a reminder, if you back us on Patreon, you can listen to our weekly bonus episode. You also gain access to our episodes a week early from when they are posted publicly. So check that out, and we appreciate the support.
Thank you very much.